Time to check in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for our latest Tacky Talk episode. Hey, Tacky, how are you?
Hey, Joe. Good to see you again. It's great school vacation week, actually. And is this Wednesday? Well, Thursday now. It's Thursday.
Yes, exactly. Time is flying by, and you are back in the office, looks like.
We are, even though it is school vacation week. People always have this misconception that we're not working. I actually have a public hearing today scheduled. At 1 o'clock, so it's about 12:10 now, talking to you. At 1 o'clock, we have a kickoff hearing, our first attempt at a hybrid hearing using Microsoft Teams and not Zoom, and a live broadcast and recorded for malegislature.gov for people obviously watch and hear. That's after the hearing is done, but you can see the recording at malegislature.gov, and we'll see how the technology works. Those of it see my hearings under Zoom. Probably had noticed the first four hearings or so, we had some technical glitches. And one time Facebook just cut out because they went down. But all those hearings are also available on the state legislature's website from last cycle and this cycle, where Microsoft Teams opposed to Zoom. And actually, we're going to have to get there 15 minutes early to see how the technology works. I've been observing other committees operate. So today's a fairly low testimony hearing. And to be honest with you guys, I mean, you don't want a big testimony hearing if the technology goes sideways.
Then you got to do it again, right?
Yeah, as people kind of wait for it because you can't continue hearing it if the technology goes down. So I'd rather have a low number of testifiers, which it looks like be under 10 today. And if something goes sideways, you know, you don't upset like 100.
Yeah. What's the hearing about today?
Today, we're doing two topics. We're doing internet lottery, as well as other lottery-related items. And we're going to do racetracks. So those are the two big topics on today's docket. We put them together. We've done this before in the past, these subjects together, pre-COVID, when we did this one person. And we think it's the most efficient way to do two topics in one spot relative to gambling that's before the committee. Those who may have been paying attention in the news, the internet lottery proposal, so-called iLottery, was actually part of the House Ways and Means budget that came out last Wednesday. And actually was also in the economic development bill from last cycle, but didn't survive conference committee economic development. So they try again in this year's budget through House Ways and Means, and the money from that would go to child care credit funds. It's not credit, it's a child care voucher fund assistance for families. Which a little bit of complexity there regarding a Senate initiative, but we need to find a funding mechanism. But at the same time, though, even though that the item is in the House Ways and Means budget, you know, committees that still have these bills as standalone bills, you know, do need to get these hearings done. And given the fact that it was actually part of the House Ways and Means budget proposal, you know, it was I would say urgency is not the right word, but I mean some necessity to get these hearings done in the bills that are before me now.
How do you feel about that personally, Tacky, the online lottery?
I have not been super duper warm to it, I'll be honest with you. Obviously, the issue is the, you know, 2,000, 3,000 partners of the lottery, the convenience stores, bars, and restaurants. That being said, as I've told the Convenience Store Association multiple occasions, that it's inevitable. And the reasoning is because the how we entertain ourselves have changed immensely. And we've talked about this many times here on this call with you regarding using your cell phone for a whole lot of things, including gambling. And we talked a lot about how sports betting was like a rapidly anticipated apps coming onto your phone. So the natural progression on lottery is going to be driven on your cell phone more so than a website. And it's going to happen eventually. The only thing is, we are a mature lottery in Massachusetts. People forget the lottery is like 51 years old. Mm. It's a very old lottery in this country. And it's also very successful. It's a $5 billion gross revenue lottery. However, it's also very dependent on the continuation of customers. And like any other business, is actually getting increasingly competitive. And my personal opinion has always been that people who gamble like to gamble in things that they enjoy. They just don't gamble for the sake of gambling unless you have some real issues, right? So most casual gamblers will find a game they enjoy to just stick to what they enjoy. So the lottery's hope is that with the iLottery system, it'll attract a new customer base And my attitude is, well, if you like betting on the Red Sox, you're not inclined to buy a scratchy unless you grew up on a scratchy, right? You know, you may not play a daily numbers, but you play a Powerball if it gets to $500 million. And, you know, maybe Keno's to pass the time in a bar or a restaurant, but, you know, is it something you're going to be doing, you know, all afternoon on your phone? So, I mean, like I said, it's individual taste. I'm not saying that everyone's the same. I'm not saying that at all. But it is, you know, everyone's a different customer preference, so to speak. And I do, but again, I still believe there's inevitability at some point because of the nature of the changing market.
Yeah. Do you know, do other states do it already?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember which ones. I know that New Hampshire has moved on to online lottery. They're working on that already. I think they already implemented some variation. I think Michigan's another state. I think Ireland. This is a global thing. It's not just the United States. Mm-hmm. So I don't have it off the top of my head, but I believe like 8 states and like 4 countries have already moved this direction.
Okay. Well, I mean, certainly we've seen just, you know, online only businesses succeed and thrive. So you're right. It's inevitable.
Yeah, absolutely. It's inevitable. I'll say it's a changing customer base. I mean, I've been working on horse racing issues pretty much the entire adult life, and I watched the entire industry change because, again, you know, young people are not going to want to go to a racetrack for a day of entertainment. Far too many other options available to people these days. Some just sitting at home playing, you know, PS5, or, you know, other people, you know, go to hike and swim and do other things around here, right? And there's accessibility, not just by public transport, by car in terms of Uber, as well as, you know, your own vehicle. But, you know, you're no longer, you know, tied to limited geography because of multiple ways of getting around. And also I say again, I mean, the Vegas guys all know that this is one of the biggest destinations to Vegas is Boston on air flights.
And they've got the red eye flights that are full all the time.
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's no reason, there's actually, you know, as you all seen, the reason why we had to win MGM and the, you know, massive proliferation of advertising on the sports betting apps.
Yeah, I read a figure where just in the month of March, I think that it took in, I don't know, $500 million just on the apps, not even counting the casinos.
Yeah, that's not surprising to me at all. I mean, as we know, any new product creates a novelty. And don't forget, the apps gave you a lot of free play.
That's true. Yeah.
So the question is, some of those folks who, you know, wagered, you know, they played the free play. They may like it. They may not like it, but at least your losses were low. So maybe, you know, you lost like 50 extra dollars or 10 extra dollars. I don't know how much you guys, you know, would play, but every customer would make a judgment call and say, hey, you know, I got my free play, a little bit of money. Sure, I'll continue to use. And other customers be like, maybe not for me, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's kind of the taste, so to speak, the app-based sports betting is created for customers. And as I said to other media outlets, you know, it will eventually level out over time and it will spike again during certain playoff events. So obviously, you know, we're moving to the Bruins playoffs and the Celtics playoffs. This is a hockey city. And I fully expect to see another massive spike on sports betting during the playoff season for the Celtics and the Bruins. And we'll slow down again once we get to the dog days of summer, waiting to see what happens to the Red Sox, Patriots summer camp, and, you know, golf and NASCAR. But I mean, you know, people bet on it. But I mean, I'm sure there's NASCAR fans up here, but I don't think it'd be the same type of wagering as if you were down in the South.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Although it is the biggest sport in the country is race car driving, believe it or not.
Oh, yes. It's been the fastest growing sports for decades, actually. It's kind of funny because we live in such a spoiled sports community up here. We all grow up around the four major sports teams in different decades, with the most youngest generation enjoying a winning streak that I've never experienced. I was, like many fans here, you know, constantly Celtic green because it was the only thing we had to hang on to in the 80s. Disappointment of some other teams around here, but it didn't mean we didn't root for them all. You know, it eclipses in some ways sports in college sports because it's such strong major four teams. And college sports is strong, but, the strength of the pro teams here is just that great. And also, we don't have a car racetrack here. I mean, that's a big part. What was the old saying, gentlemen start your coffins or whatever?
That's right. So when it comes to online lottery, one of the biggest concerns, same with online gambling, is how to keep minors from utilizing it, right?
Yeah, you're correct. It's the exact same concerns that with sports betting. Minor access, you have to keep it within geographic of the of Massachusetts because you can't cross state lines with this gambling device, just like sports betting. Obviously, there's impact on convenience stores and restaurants. What's the transferability of money? Like, the idea is that you're supposed to get new customers, but is it going to be new customers or transferring old customers to a new device? Right. And what the economic impact is on it. It's not like sports betting casinos because there is no real transfer
Right.
of gambling dollars. We're just trying to steal from Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun, right? So that was always that logic. And then of course, the revenue. So the way the House Ways and Means budget sets it up, it goes to this dedicated trust fund for childcare assistance. However, with this money, legislators will fight over it.
Because I have this project and I have this project and I want this project done, and so that's how democracy works.
And you said it better than I did. That is very true.
So what else is going on in Beacon Hill?
We have, I think, 1,300 plus amendments at this point. I just stopped looking at how many amendments for the budget there are.
Is that a lot compared to years past?
No, that's not too bad. I mean, I've been around was up over 1,500
Wow,
in the
okay.
House. I've seen that happen. So it's not terrible, but I mean, look, I got to put this perspective, folks. I mean, this is my let's see, 11 to 23. So I'm in what my 12th year in the House. So this is my 12th budget, and I did almost a dozen years working for Mike Morrissey. So I did a dozen budgets there. So I'm on like 24th to 25th budget. So at a certain point, I mean, you kind of sort of have to know how this works. You do this enough times, and not to claim that I know every single intricate, decimal point in the thing, but the general dynamics don't change decade to decade. It just takes you many years to learn how it works. So it becomes more routine in terms of operation. And I'm watching new members and helping new members go through their first, second, and third budgets because you don't pick it up the first time.
Yeah.
Unless you're like some kind of brand, like legislator mind that doesn't really exist because no one's born with this mind.
Numbers savant or something, right? Yeah.
Yeah, most people take like three budgets under the belt and they start to figure out the dynamics of how it works. So, it's going to be a slog next week for maybe I think 3 days and 3 nights. Hopefully, not too late every night. Our friends from Western Mass or Deep South Mass. Likely going to get hotel rooms in the geographic area because driving back, upwards of 4 hours if you live in North Adams.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, that's
It's a
crazy.
lot. I mean, if you're out of here at 1 a.m., I mean, you're back here at 10 a.m., 4 hour drive to North Adams and 4 hour drive back. It defeats the point of it.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll do our next week's podcast in your pajamas, Tacky.
Well, that would have been more of the days of the that would have been more of the days of remote COVID.
That's right.
I actually am very happy to come back into the office in terms of going to session and taking votes. I am. I am tired of phone-based voting. I am aware that the Senate still allows remote voting as a rule. The House got rid of that rule. I am not throwing my colleagues under the bus across the hall, but just to let you all know, we are requiring you in person unless you have a legit medical condition. Like you're in the hospital waiting for surgery. I mean, you have to be really sick.
All right.
But no, it's been much easier in terms of interacting with folks, getting answers from people. I mean, I got text messages from members saying, "Hey, I got a bill in your committee. Can we talk about it on the floor next week?" I'm like, "Yeah, we're not going anywhere. I mean, we're going to be here during the budget, and it's going to be dead time." It gives me a chance to, have conversations about my own interests, but also other people's interests. And it is such much better day, much much better way of working. I'll tell you all
Yeah,
right.
if we talked about before, there is no substitute for in-person communication for sure. It's always going to have its place, thankfully.
Agreed. I mean, this style of communication we're doing is never going away. And there's a lot of pros to it. But even text messaging, for example, I mean, the amount of times it takes me to text message you versus a conversation, it's like five times as long. So, like I said,
Something you can, take care of in one phone call could, result in 30 texts.
that's correct. Yeah, I think everyone understands what I'm saying at this stage in terms of our lives. And Yes, I'm looking forward to doing a slog in person, so to speak, because we're supposed to slog on the phone.
Yes, exactly. Hey, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about Fox capitulated and paid off Dominion like a ton of money.
Yeah, 787 Maine. You notice how happy the lawyers look in that front page picture? It was the first thing people pointed out to me. It's like, those are happy looking lawyers. I'm like, I hope so. They get at least 25% minimum of those expenses. I mean, why can't
I know it was half of what they were looking for, but still, I'm sure they're pretty happy.
Well, it seems like this is an attorney. I'm like, clearly, I'm doing something wrong as an attorney. I'm not getting the 25% of whatever that is. I mean, but, you know, the interesting thing is this is a couple of points I pointed out when I was following this. And I think you agree with some of this too. One is that there's a danger to journalism, right? You know, despite what people's opinion of Fox is, and I'm not going to get into that, it's still a journalistic network. And during the Potemkin papers, if I remember correctly, the Potemkin papers, the U.S. Supreme Court preserved the First Amendment right of the press, you know, that you have to set a very strict scrutiny, very high bar to demonstrate the press is going out of the way to commit libel against you for the exclusive purpose of ruining you. That is a very hard thing to prove.
Right.
It has to be proved that it's malicious intent. They're going after you specifically to kill you off versus doing journalism. And you all know the National Enquirer is the most famous one of getting smacked around. And they actually lose case in National Enquirer because they couldn't prove that it was actually journalistic integrity. It was designed just to smack somebody else. Of course, they end up paying. I mean, there's another tabloid as well. And it tends to happen more often in European courts than U.S. courts because the scrutiny level is a little bit different. First Amendment is not a universal thing for everyone. Mm-hmm. We had the most strict scrutiny, most high bar to prove that you basically were abusing your First Amendment rights. It's a very high bar in this country, like other countries. So that's the first danger here is the Dominion won this case. It was set a new bar. And of course, it'd be appealed and go to the U.S. Supreme Court. Yeah. The risk is, you know, whether it be a bar against journalists, you know, on what is the new standard regarding intent of, you know, hurting somebody through your medium, right? And the flip side, telling the truth is kind of important, folks, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, that's the other side of journalist integrity. But Dominion had a little bit of a quirky problem. Dominion had to demonstrate somewhere along the way they were badly hurt by Fox. Like, Fox went out to hurt us. They knew it, they wanted to do it, and they went out of the way to do it. And by the way, we got damaged in this way. In the case of a corporation, we financial. And that was going to be hard for Dominion to prove.
Right.
So what would really be happening is that it would be a drag out, knockout litigation fight on witness cross-examination where they drag in, you know, half of Fox folks and then they drag in half of Dominion folks and they drag in everybody who has been injured by Fox as a election worker using a Dominion device because, you know, they use Dominion devices, you know, they were subject to death threats, as some of you may be aware of. And it'll just be this like really brutal. And I think for those not involved, entertaining trial and watching how this type of litigation unfolds and the strategies involved and all that. It, to me, Dominion had like a 50-50 coin flip on winning it. The jury being instructed in a high bar to prove, you know, that this was a malicious, absolutely going out of the way to hurt Dominion specifically.
Yeah, they would have to produce some type of document to prove that their point, right?
Correct. On the flip side, Fox is taking huge risk because it's not just about Fox, it's about journalism as a whole.
That's right.
The pressure is on Fox by the entire First Amendment world, regardless of your opinion, is now on Fox to protect. And of course, you know, dragging Rupert Murdoch up there, who's, by the way, not an American, people forget that, you know, running a news media telling us politics. Because, you know, I hear a lot of crap from folks, as you know, about, you know, well, foreign influence. I'm like, well, Rupert Murdoch, right? You know, there'd be that slog fest, you know, dragging his politics out and, you know, yank along his other parts of his media empire. He owns the Wall Street Journal, which interesting reports on this, but also a lot of tabloid media in Australia and England and many other places. He's a global publisher mogul. And now it's all open game on the floor of the court. So, you know, you had this interesting dynamic where there's enormous pressure on a journalistic outfit to defend journalism on the despite their own stupid. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, you have a company that has to demonstrate enormous damages. However, the negative negative behavior of the journalist organization, you know, would outweigh the interest of Dominion. It could have been really ugly for both sides.
Yeah, I was surprised to see the settlement. I understand it, but I was surprised, and it made me pause and think, oh gosh, that's not good for the journalistic integrity of, you know, the Fourth Estate in general.
I agree. I mean, I, you know, obviously as elected official, I mean, I've dealt with a lot of different media outlets, and those who reports have dealt with me know that I try to just tell her how it is. Sometimes pick less colorful words when possible, particularly if it's being recorded. And I tell you, I know what I don't know, I do know. But I mean, I won't play gotcha games. And you know this, Joe, as well as I do. Some folks like to play gotcha on the telephone or interview. And I do not play gotcha games. That is not happening. I mean, you have a question, I answer your question. If I have an answer, I have an answer. If I don't have an answer, I don't have an answer. And I've actually more than once, particularly younger journalists, and they may not like this or not, but I mean, I pose questions like that. Well, okay, I see where you're going to strip, but have you tried calling this place? Have you followed this lead? You know, have you tried looking at it from this angle? Maybe you should call this particular government or not-for-profit or advocacy group and try to point reporters to directions that would help them provide better information for the audience that's reading it.
Yeah, that's what gets lost sometimes is, you know, what is the ultimate purpose? You're trying to provide your audience with accurate information.
Oh yeah, I'm not shy pointing people to different places either. I mean, you know, I know stuff, but I mean, I don't know all the stuff. So, you know, I've more than often given phone numbers, websites, and reports to reporters. Say, look, go here, read it, get back to me if you have a question. But this is where you need to look first. And you know, I've disputed some data points, because frankly, they, you know, some stuff is old. I mean, mm-hmm. I have one report, I won't name names, but I mean, I was using a data set from 15 years ago. I'm like, that's 15 years old. You want me to comment on a data set 15 years ago?
It's lazy, just lazy.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I'm not commenting on a data set that old. I mean, you know, it's just stupid.
No, it's right. It's you've taken a wrong turn and you're still going in the same direction. You know, you need to turn around and come back.
Yeah, where are we going with the story, right? And you're all aware. I mean, you know, and I'm aware too. I mean, you can't write the whole story based on verbatim what I tell you. Like, this format's great because you can turn me off and Joe off and you're tired of us. But I mean, kind of move free flowing thought conversation. You know, mm-hmm. reporters are looking for that 15 seconds of video audio, or you know, that 10 or 15 words, maybe tops on a quote. And it becomes a communication delicacy mm-hmm. On how to pick the right words to answer the question and try to do it as succinctly as possible, because that's more likely not the quotes that's going to be used.
That's right. Yeah. They have time constraints, you know, they have to fit their story into. It's unfortunate, but there's a template, you know, that they're given by their editors. And if it doesn't fit, then the story gets tossed.
Yeah, and like I say, yeah, I agree with you completely. And I'm very aware of that as well. So I don't have an adversarial relationship with media, but I'm very conscientious of the job they have, conscious of the job I have. And, you know, it's also about maintaining good relationships. Being aggressive doesn't create good relationship conversation for the future.
Right. Yeah, no, I find the local media in our area, for the most part, is, you know, just trying to do it right, trying to be fair and equitable. National media, a little different, I think.
Agreed. I mean, I've never been on a national media outlet. I'm not looking to be on a national media outlet. But, you know, on a personal level, I always enjoy when reporters actually swing by the office and we'll sit for 30 minutes. And yeah, no one knows shorthand anymore, I discovered. So everyone's using recording devices, which is fine. But, you know, actually engage in a conversation as opposed to just, you know, come up with a list of questions and just walk out the door.
Right.
The conversation is actually much easier at understanding what they're trying to get to, and for me to provide accurate information for them to get to. And so, like I said, sometimes I don't have it on hand. I will, you know, bring up a website or provide some other direction, phone numbers to get to where reporting needs to go. I think one of the tough parts is people tend to be skittish about it because they're like, afraid. I'm like, you can't be afraid if you actually know what you're talking about. If you don't know what you're talking about, then help them out.
That's right. Yeah. And if you don't, just say so. People can respect that. I can, at least, anyways.
Yeah. And then try to be helpful. And more than once, I've called people back. I'm like, all right, I don't know what's going on. Give me a half hour. I'll get back to you.
Right.
You
know, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's what we're talking about. All right. Okay. We can talk about this now. I know what's going on. So, but you know, the Fox issue is a big issue in terms of so many different levels beyond just a lawsuit. And by the way, Dominion now has a ton of money, and they've already suing Sidney Powell for direct was an individual. She's just a lawyer. She's not a media outlet. So she's a different standard that's going to be placed on her. And I'm sure they have so much money now because it's like a $30 million company. Just got like probably a settlement after the lawyers are paid off, probably like $500 million still.
Right.
So I'm confident they're like, well, who else can we go after that has been beating us up the last 8 years on our equipment regarding falsehoods?
Yep. And
if you're not a journalistic outlet, I mean, the barrier is now different.
Yeah.
Again, still hard to prove. It's hard to prove libel. Just telling you right now, it's hard to prove. However, you know, they now have a boatload of money.
Sure, they can try and fail as many times as they want, still come out on top.
That's exactly it. So Fox just basically handed them through the settlement the capacity to go after everybody else they feel they've been wronged by.
Has the administration there on Beacon Hill finished filling out their positions there, Jackie?
They're kind of working on it. The big stuff, yeah. I mean, the big commissioners, but you know, the big secretaries and others, yeah. The smaller areas are still moving down the line. The one that I'm trying to remember is housing secretary been appointed yet? That's the one we've been waiting for. I don't believe that's been appointed still. That's the one.
Know.
Yeah, that's one everyone's really waiting for up here. We want to see the housing secretaries because housing, of course, is a paramount concern around here. I am aware that the mayor of Chelsea is now the DCR commissioner.
Oh.
I need a meeting with him like soon because I need to like talk about all my DCR problems, and there's a lot of them.
Yeah, right in Quincy for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. Huge problems. Like I gotta get my hold on this guy. And since he's a former mayor in Chelsea, I think we'll get some more understanding about our challenges south of Boston. And then you have a DPL is a division professional level, divisional occupational license. Now you see division professional license, you know, has changed commissioners, hasn't taken place yet, but it's already been announced to be a transition coming up in a month or so. So we're going to have to meet the new commissioners there. You know, we have, you know, other state agencies, Office of Consumer Affairs, other agencies we deal with, they're in transition mode as well. New undersecretaries are being promoted up from lower end jobs. So, I mean, it's still ongoing. Unfortunately, for better or worse, me and my co-chair are probably not going to be able to meet some of these folks probably as we get closer to June, as they're all settling into new roles. And because you know, some of these folks are moving from like chief of staff or general counsel up, and then you got to get new chief of staff, general counsel. And
gotcha.
I think you guys know what I'm talking about. When you have a new sheriff in town, the new sheriff wants their people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a transition period for certain. And it's, you know, I mean, 8 years of the former administration. So it's a lot of legwork to do.
Absolutely. And it's not just meeting the top of the food chain, right? I got to meet all the guys that, you know, below the top of the food chain as well. It's not just strictly, you know, I just talked to the secretary, I'm done. I mean, there's all these other layers of folks that legislators have to engage with because the secretary is not always available, you know, on a minute's notice. And a lot of these other folks are your worker bees. So my staff and their staffs have to communicate. And obviously I engage them directly as well because, you know, we want to get work done. I'm not going to sit around and wait for the secretariat.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Have there been any changes to the House budget proposal since we last talked?
Well, budget debate hasn't started yet. So starting Monday, there'll be changes.
Okay. it's not that different from the administration's, is it?
Not really. I mean, we didn't increase the bottom line very much.
Right.
Some of the biggest changes, and I was a little bit off in this fact, but I mean, one of the biggest changes is how we utilize the so-called millionaire's tax money.
Hmm.
So I initially thought we were going to put the whole thing into a special account. I was only half correct. So the governor proposed, and we went along with it, to take $1 billion. We're anticipating $1 billion. And any surplus of $1 billion would go to a special fund.
Oh, okay.
And then we'll figure it out as we go along.
Okay.
But the actual numbers would be, so we bake it in. So any baked in $1 billion from the ring. However, you know, we actually do an exact 50-50 split between education and transportation projects associated with that millionaire's tax. So the governor had a near 50-50. So I'm not like being quibby about it, but we followed similar priorities regarding investments in transportation that we can pay now, as well as supplementing existing education programs.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it would seem to me infrastructure, roads and bridges, right, have to be right on top.
Yeah. Road and bridges, MBTA. Yeah. The budget set aside through Minnesota Tech a little bit of money for the MBTA. And the last supplemental budget that we did, included a little bit of money for hiring. As we know, we talked a lot about the workforce shortage. They need a little more money for the incentive components. The MBTA is bonded separately from us. The MBTA carries its own debts. It's not part of the larger state debt program. We're conscious of that as well, but we're not adopting their debt. Into the state. They have a whole mechanism around that. And it doesn't really solve the long-term problems at this point. Maybe down the road, if the T actually gets to fixed, this poor guy, the new general manager, has to fix this. If they can get their whole thing leveled out and then they have an actual plan, the legislation should consider what they're suggesting regarding perhaps, we take some of the debt load, but I'm not inclined to absorb T debt just because. And this has been kind of the problem with past GMs. They just throw stuff out there. There was no plan. It's just one giant sticking a finger in a dike situation. And you had another little pop out in the dam. And then, and then you're constantly putting your fingers everywhere. I'm hoping this GM will actually have a plan. And if the legislature is a participant in terms of trying to solve the problem, then we want to hear it.
Yeah. Is the rising interest rates atmosphere affecting the state bond payments?
It's going to affect our future borrowing. Absolutely. Yeah. We have a debt ceiling of our own. It's a voluntary debt ceiling that that we've been practicing since the end of the caucus era. It's probably over about $2.2 billion now is our debt ceiling. We borrow every single year. We do have a debt limit, which I think is about $20 billion at this point. I haven't looked in a while. I last looked 7 years ago. Someone asked me that question, but we do have a debt ceiling. And we do go past the debt ceiling for very specific items, Chapter 90 being the biggest one. That's the one that impacts cities and towns regarding road and bridge work, about $1.8 million, which is, sitting in Senate, it's debate, waiting for Quincy to get it. We think about $1.8 million. That's what the city's going to get. But it'll affect borrowing. And so in school building assistance programs will be impacted. Any new debt we take on for future projects can be impacted. Mm-hmm. Debt borrowing that we do on behalf of, Chapter 90, cities and towns and school building assistance, those are state programs that take debts off the books of cities and towns. We have to reconsider exactly how many projects we're able to get off the ground. Because again, it's going to bump again exactly our borrowing limits.
Yeah.
And we won't be able to refinance. One of the things that we did do when the rates started dropping like a rock more than one time in the last 30 years, you refinanced.
Sure. Yeah. Just like you would your mortgage right on your house.
Exactly. Yeah. And it gives new flexibility under the debt ceilings to be able to, borrow responsibly and to be able to, continue a growth of local infrastructure projects.
Mm-hmm.
So, the state bond rate is actually very good for a state. I mean, we're in the A's, the low A's, but we're in the A's. And at least we're going to get the best rate possible. But, the Fed's going to hike again in May, what all indicators are. And, Treasurer Goldberg and the Governor's Administration and Finance Office is going to have to work out, the prioritization based on the fact that they have to, when they account for the interest rate, they're going to actually have less cash to accomplish capital projects they're trying to get to.
Yeah, that's what the Fed's trying to do, right, is tighten credit. It starts at the homeowner level and goes all the way up to the statehouse level.
And the Fed's a $1 trillion infrastructure plan over 10 years. I mean, we still have to put up a match of about 20%. So we'll bond out that match.
Yeah.
But that bond now has a higher interest rate to get the match against the federal transportation money.
Right.
Cities and towns are in the same position as we are. And if they want to get a piece of transportation money, if the project fits for them, they have to put up a match. Same thing, they have to do a match with us at the state level. Mm-hmm. Very few free or true free money. I mean, Chapter 90 is free. Local aid is essentially free in the sense that there's no match required. There's no city that has to put up a matching component.
Yeah.
But we're cognizant of the fact that, you know, as we move forward on not just this year's capital budget, going forward, you know, we have to, whatever we bought, we have to keep in mind the impact of interest rates.
Yeah. I know you're short on time today, Tacky, because your hearing's coming up, but let's tell folks how to get a hold of you.
Yeah, 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370 is the phone. We're still in room 42 at the State House, which is this office you see behind me. And tacky.chan at mahouse.gov, T-A-C-K-E-Y.C-H-A-N at mahouse.gov, as my emails are filling up with co-sponsor requests and amendments. And of course, we have State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook, as well as at Tacky Chan Twitter. Please do not social media messages. It does not work. That's for the email, call the office. It's much more expedient. And of course, malegislature.gov. You know, watch the public hearings as we kind of move along this session, as well as watching formal sessions. And of course, QA TV does carry some of those broadcasts. I was surprised to see myself one day before COVID on the screen. Like, how did that happen? I should have called me. and obviously, you know, catch Joe at QA TV and his morning podcast. The latest quick news, which I did on the drive-in this morning.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. By the way, I like the M&M tie. What's your favorite M&M?
They all taste the same. When I could eat M&Ms, no, I can't anymore for myriad reasons. But I actually like the peanut M&Ms personally.
Okay. Then Tacky endorsed.
Tacky endorsed M&M. Unfortunately, I can't eat these things. I do my myriad of food allergies. But
thanks a lot, Tacky.
Sure thing, Joe. Catch you in a week's time.